Tuesday morning broadcast here at JM in the AM on this 16th of February in the 4th of Adar. Well, with all the association we've had with the UAE over the last few months, especially with our big trip in December and being in touch with people there over the airwaves over the last couple of months, it is amazing to me that we haven't had the opportunity till today, and I'm so glad we have this opportunity today to give a tremendous amount of credit and laud the accomplishments of Rabbi Yehuda Sarna. Rabbi Sarna, of course, has been such a key figure in the UAE. And the news is that as Jewish life continues to flourish and grow in the Gulf, the local Jewish communities of, listen to this, Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE have come together to share resources by forming the Association of Gulf Jewish Communities. Rabbi Yehuda Sarna is the honorary chairman of the Association of Gulf Jewish Communities. Rabbi Sarna, a pleasure to welcome you to JM in the AM.
Well, it's great to be here. And if you would have told me a year ago that the pandemic would help create a linkage, a connection between Jewish communities and the Gulf, I would have told you you were crazy. But sure enough, I mean, it was just a little under a year. I was on Grand Street. Anachem, right, not far from your studio in the kosher store,
yeah,
and purchasing boxes, cases of grape juice to ship over to the UAE, along with matzahs that I had FedExed, and to provide for Jewish people in the UAE. And sure enough, as we put out this call, you know, who needs matzah, who needs grape juice, we started getting requests from people in Qatar, from people in Kuwait, from people in Bahrain, from people in Saudi Arabia, I mean, from all over the Gulf. And just, you know, in those following weeks, as we started doing our, you know, these Zoom calls every, you know, before Shabbos every week, you know, we had people logging on from all over. And so in many ways, this association is a natural outgrowth from the darkness of the pandemic.
The point being, I just want to make sure this is clear to everybody, the point being that you're making that without that initial effort during the pandemic to you know, in a very long distance manner, help the Jews of the UAE, without that initial effort, there would not have been this collaboration which formed through all these different Jewish communities of the Gulf afterward.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it's been beautiful to see how each community, actually, it's not just about matzah and grape juice,
right,
you know, but how each community is bringing its own unique resources to help the other. The Jewish community in Bahrain is the historic Jewish community. I mean, it's been there for 150 years. They have a synagogue that's been there, a physical building. They have a cemetery that's been there. They're also citizens of the country of Bahrain, which is not the case in the other Gulf countries, where Jews are there either as residents, you know, residents or as expats. And it really is the, you know, in many ways, it's each community bringing what it has to help the other.
Well, I'm glad that Grand Street had a role in all that. Pretty amazing. Rabbi Sarna, as you know, I mean, with my very, very limited familiarity with the Jewish communities of the Gulf, the one, because of the two-day trip, the one that I have somewhat of a familiarity with is the UAE, and I saw a little bit of Jewish life and how Jewish leadership works and the way it attracts people, Shabbos, Yontif, and during the week to be part of the Jewish scene. I mean, every one of these communities that I named and you just spoke of, Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, each one of them has a completely different level of activity in its own relatively small Jewish community, right? I would guess that some of the countries that are represented by the association really have very limited Jewish presence, while others, you know, get much closer to what the UAE has.
That's right. I mean, the UAE is always going to have this magnet for tourists. And now, as you saw, Nachum, Jewish tourists are no exception. But look, when you're talking about Jews throughout the Gulf, I mean, you're talking about both citizens of countries like in Bahrain. You're talking about expats, as in the case of the UAE. You're also talking about somewhere between 500 to 1,000 U.S. servicemen and women who are stationed on bases.
Right.
And we've been working with the Jewish Welfare Board, which is an entity. Many people don't know about it unless you're in the military, but
right,
it's really the organization that is making provisions for for Jews throughout the who are serving the United States of America in the military and who are stationed all over the world, and the emerging partnership with them is just something that we're very proud of.
If it's obvious, UAE and Bahrain, two very good examples, at least from our vantage point. We don't know all the inside workings, obviously. But if it's obvious that those communities are going to grow, both tourist-wise, and I think you would also agree that, you know, in terms of residents, it's very possible these Jewish communities are going to get larger over the next few months and years. What about the others? I mean, Saudi Arabia, for instance, Kuwait, for instance. I mean, you don't expect an actual growth of the Jewish community in those areas, do you?
One of the things I learned is that we can't just think about tomorrow. We have to think about the day after tomorrow. Mm. You know, I've been going to the UAE since 2010, January of 2010, before NYU opened its campus in Abu Dhabi, before it opened NYU Abu Dhabi. And look, I brought with me during that trip chumash, stone chumash, which I plan to kind of make sure stays there.
Right.
And I wasn't thinking about, is anybody going to use this chumash tomorrow? I was thinking, maybe someday in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And look, since we've made the announcement, I've had Jews in Saudi Arabia email me out of the blue. This is just a day saying, is there any way I could log on to a Megillah reading? So the answer is we just don't know. Just don't know. We have to operate with what we do know. What we do know is that there are Jewish communities growing in certain countries. And that there may be ones in other countries that may come about.
Right.
We've also, and I think as we're working to also establish a Beitin, what we're calling the Beitin of Arabia. And look, Nahum, I've been working closely with people in the European Beitin, which includes the London Besdin, and with the Beitin of America, who've been just a tremendous support. They understand that what we're trying to do here is set something up for the long term, not just for tomorrow. You know what I mean?
I think you need to explain to us why that's important. Many people, we understand the importance of having, a Jewish cemetery as communities grow, of an Eruv, a mikveh. There are certain things that, some people even joke and eat a kosher pizza shop in order for a community to grow. So we understand that. Why is a Beth Din of Arabia so important and vital at this stage?
The presence of a Beit Din signals that there is a way, there is a path for Jews to live a full life in this country.
Wow.
Because, first of all, governments need an address a direction for whom to address questions of how do we ensure that Jewish life can in fact be practiced, which, believe it or not, is something that Muslim countries, Arab countries, Arab governments, contrary to the perception, is something that they care very deeply about.
Right.
And of course, the perception is and it's not based on nothing, right? There is some grounds for it, but the perception is that all Arab countries are only accept one religion, and that's Islam.
Mm-hmm.
But look, once you have a Beit Din which is interacting with the ministries of justice or the judicial department, and that there can be an acceptance of Jewish laws of inheritance, Jewish laws of marriage and divorce settlements, other questions of Jewish registering birth, making sure that kosher food or other religious items can make their way into the country.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really important, this really paves the way for a normal Jewish existence in these countries. And to the credit of the Bahrain Jewish community, they've had this relationship with the Ministry of Justice in Bahrain going back decades, if not more than a century, where the decisions that have been rendered for them on behalf of Rabbanim, not ones who are living locally, but diaspora Rabbanim, have been accepted, have been stamped by the Bahrain Ministry of Justice, and it's really through that that we are establishing the Beit Din of Arabia.
Such an important thing for people to realize. Rabbi Yehuda Sarna is with us, honorary chair of the Association of Gulf Jewish Communities. In addition, of course, as you just alluded to, there'll be an Arabian kosher certification agency. I'm assuming the goal is to establish the same standards for all the countries and all the kosherous work that's being done in all those countries. This could only be for a benefit of the worldwide Jewish community comes to visit these six countries and comes to visit the Gulf region. Do you see already some type of a desire on the part of people in the food industry to become part of this Arabian Kosher Certification Agency?
Look, it's just not the very beginning. What we do know is that there is intense interest among Jews around the world, Jews in Israel, Jews in Europe, Jews in the United States, to visit the Gulf, to be a part of what's really emerging as a family reunion between Arabs from a certain part of the world and Jews from other parts of the world, where once upon a time people lived next door to each other. And one of the things that I've seen, especially in the UAE, is this culture of hospitality, of wanting to do just anything to accommodate, to make sure that the guests are comfortable. And this is a part of it.
I know that Rabbi Abadi and Ibrahim Dawood Nunu are both very involved, obviously, in the leadership of the association. Have the board members, have the representatives of each of the six countries been chosen already or not?
Yeah, yes. And we had an amazing Zoom call last week, and with all the board members, the representatives from each of the countries. And it's very powerful. It was very emotional, actually. On the one hand, to see Mr. Nunu, who was so well established in Bahrain, and then to see others who had recently come to the region, others who've been living undercover as a Jewish person for decades in the Arab world.
Right.
It was quite dramatic, and with the announcement coming out yesterday, I have to tell you, Nachum, there may be many things that I'm not optimistic about, but especially given the pandemic and how things have gone. But about this, I'm optimistic.
It's not just an optimism, and Rabbi Yehuda Sarna is with us live via telephone. It's not just optimism. You know your Jewish history, Rabbi Sarna. We know about the era that was very Eurocentric. The global Jewish community was very Eurocentric, and of course followed by a period of time that we're in now where the Jewish community was very North American centric. And now, of course, we've seen over the last decade or so where the Jewish community is now so Israel centric, thank God, with, we're approaching the majority of Jews in the world being in Israel. And it just seems like there could be, and history is tough to, the future is tough to predict. But the way we're going with the leadership that you're providing, it looks like there could be a time soon enough, whatever that means in the context of, years and decades, where the Jewish world is really Middle Eastern centric again. Again, not to take anything away from our beloved state of Israel, and I always state the future of the Jewish peoples in the state of Israel, but I think you know what I mean, where the diaspora is going to make a major shift. Do you see that?
I think that we are on the precipice of something that we don't know exactly what kind of change it's going to bring. And I think the opening up of boundary of borders between Israel and the UAE, Israel and Bahrain, being able to fly over Saudi Arabia is going to redefine Israeli identity. Going to redefine, right now people typically see the terms Arab and Jewish as opposites.
Right.
But I think that's going to start breaking down.
Yeah.
And I think Israel's identity as a member of the region, is going to shift. And you're already seeing that, by the way, if you read, as I do, the newspapers in the UAE. A lot of their news is about Israel. And if you read Israeli media, a lot of their news is about the UAE.
Right.
Not just UAE-Israel relations, but Israel had Israeli media had a whole profile on on the probe, the UAE probe that landed on Mars. It opens up the map in a different way. It does redefine the map. So, and when it comes to the Jewish world, I think, look, there are many different theories or predictions out there about what it's going to look like. Some people are saying that the UAE is going to be Israel's Florida, in New York-centric terms, you know, because the weather there in the winter is so nice.
Right.
There's going to be not just 70,000 Israelis as visited during December, but hundreds of thousands right. of Israelis visiting every winter. That might be. It's going to be that many American Jews who are traveling to Israel, whether for Pesach, I'm already hearing that for Pesach, or for others, are going to say, you know what, I'm already there. Maybe I'll make a stop in the UAE.
Yeah.
From the UAE, it's easy to get anywhere. I mean, their airlines go to Arba Kanfot Aretz. I mean, they go all over. And so it's opening up trade. It's opening up travel. It's opening up possibilities for identity. It's enabling a kind of family reunion, which we have not seen in any kind of dramatic way, you know, in our living history.
Yeah, I'll tell you, some people listening right now are rolling their eyes, and I'll tell you why. Because and people asked us what was the most important part of the trip that we took in December, and I said the most important part was the message that I brought back to a lot of people here and around the world, but especially here, who grew up with a certain mindset. And I have to say this in a really sensitive way, but I think you'll know exactly what I mean. Maybe even rightfully so, because of the experience that so many of our parents and grandparents had. Maybe even rightfully so. We were brought up in the quote-unquote yeshiva league, as I call it, you know, the modern Orthodox day schools, high schools, with a certain attitude or atmosphere that there was really no such thing as getting along with Arab communities, that there was a desire among most on the other side of that relationship to be unfriendly at the least, and at the most, unfortunately, you know, want to exterminate Jews. And again, because of the experience of previous generations, I can almost excuse that attitude. We go to the UAE, we meet people and have that, you know, short experience but fulfilling one, where it's obvious that these communities, meaning ours and theirs, can get along and can move forward and can replicate the way Jews and Arab communities got along in centuries past. And I think this move, with this announcement yesterday, Association of Gulf Jewish Communities, only adds to that hope and hopefully to that eventuality. Do you get what I mean by the background of how we grew up and how different the future could be?
Absolutely. I mean, my first experience, first time I went to Abu Dhabi, was in January 2010, in the shadow of the second Intifada, which had taken the life of my second cousin, sadly, who was killed at a bus stop. As well, I mean, many of us were experiencing that trauma, the second Intifada. And my first time in an Arab country, and I made sure that everywhere I was going, I was with another colleague from NYU. And I remember once I was in a supermarket in the Carrefour, a French supermarket, in Abu Dhabi, and the person I was with asked if I, you know, he had to go somewhere else in the store. He said, I'll be back in a second. And I was in the cheese section, I remember, looking to see if I could find a hechsher on the Philadelphia cream cheese. and all of a sudden, this wave of fear, this surge of fear came over me when I realized I was all alone. And I was certain, oh my, it was crazy. I was certain I would get stabbed there and then because I was unguarded. And of course, nothing happened, but it really did force me to deal with the stereotypes that I had and the fears that I had and the Arabophobia that I had. And it led me to a changed perception. And by the way, if you're tracking what's happening in Israel, you're seeing that some of the voices which had previously been, you know, for lack of a better term, anti-Arab, have really moderated as a result of the rapprochement.
Yeah, good point. I think there are exceptions to that, but I think generally speaking, you're right, and it's significant.
And let me say it in a different way. The bad guys know this.
Right.
I mean, we put out this announcement And you know, the bad guys, people who are opposed to reconciliation at all between Jews. Right. I mean, I only saw negativity on among Muslim, you know, extremist group.
Right.
Who came out very harshly against this.
Right. I left the UAE. I had said that my desire was basically to go to the leadership of the PA and say, guys, you know, wouldn't you love to have this? Wouldn't you love to have all the technology and the future and the building and the commerce and people, you know, citizens getting the health care they need and the money they need and a tremendous, you know, employment opportunities? Wouldn't you just want this? All you need to do is, you know, forge a nice relationship and be mentioned with the people on the other side. But I don't
think... I got to say something. But, you know, if I know our time is limited, but I got to say something.
Sure.
Leadership is not a function, I believe. It's not the task of an individual. It's the task of a generation.
Right.
And the only way this grand, you know, reconciliation, this family reunion is going to happen is through people to people. Is when every single Jewish tourist to the UAE or to other countries treats everyone there with respect, and the way we behave, you know, whether it's in our politics or whether it's in our business or whether it's in our culture or whether it's in our media, it is in a way that signals that we are ready for this. But this is a we. This is not an I. And this is not just about establishing an institution. This is about educating a generation. And for the better of the Jewish people, we really need to lean in to this challenge.
Yeah,
and it's a hard challenge. Yeah. How do we leave behind decades of animosity and look forward to decades of prosperity? This is a very difficult turn to make. And that's my hope, whether it's just about establishing the Jewish community in the UAE, which, you know, I've been focused on, and I'm very blessed that just last week, actually, the Jewish community in Dubai received its official license from the authorities there, which is a major achievement. And whether it's about establishing this association, these are vehicles, really, for the transformation of a generation. And it's that challenge that we all need to lean into. And you're a big piece of it. Your listeners are a big piece of it. I hope that they come and visit, as you did, in the footsteps of Nachum Siegel. and when they come, you know, to make a point not just of eating at the kosher restaurants or going up to the heights of the Burj Khalifa, but actually meeting the local population
and you have no idea, based on our experience, how anxious they are to meet. To hear about what a yarmulke is all about, to hear, have you ever been to Israel, to hear what is your tradition like compared to ours, and the similarities, frankly. There's a lot of similarities between their rituals and our rituals, and they like discussing it and having a friendly conversation. And look, I know that, again, I know who's rolling their eyes out there. I know it because I was one of them until a few months ago. But there's a lot going on, and there are trails being blazed, and all of us can be part of it, as Rabbi Sarna just outlined for us. By the way, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but just, I mean, if it happened to, I mean, what's the, of all six, which is the official largest Jewish population, which is officially the smallest Jewish population of these six? Would you know off the...
We're in the process. Look, the UAE is the largest, and this is one of our hopes about making this association public, is that we would have a better sense of how many people are actually out there.
Who do you think's the smallest of these six? Like, it's likely which
smallest
one?
I would say as of now is likely Saudi Arabia.
Oh wow, interesting.
Likely. And Saudi Arabia, you know, they've made a lot of changes in the past few years. And certainly, I don't know if you saw last year, the head of the Muslim World League, which is a preeminent Islamic organization funded by the Saudis, really, in to a certain extent, you know, part of the Saudi Arabian government, visited Auschwitz with the HAC, and HAC has done phenomenal work So there are changes that are afoot in Saudi Arabia, but as of now, I would say that is the smallest Jewish population.
Right.
But let's see. I mean, we're going to see my prediction, and this is, we haven't started working on this, but my prediction is that we're going to see the renovation and if you will, the marking of Jewish cemeteries, which exist throughout the Arabian Peninsula,
right.
And that is true in Qatar, in Kuwait. That is true in Oman. That is true in Saudi Arabia, where that we know that there are cemeteries that were there. We don't know their exact condition.
Just the opposite of those who want to wipe out our past. They want to acknowledge our past.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's the amazing thing that you will hear over and over again from Emiratis and from others in the Gulf, is that they feel like because of the Islamist winds that swept the peninsula and drove Jews and Christians off of the peninsula, or driving Jews and Christians off of the, drove Jews away, but also have driven and in some ways continue to drive Christians off. So many of the now the most forward-looking voices are looking around and saying, hey, where did everybody else go? And a part of our identity, a part of our culture, is being able to spread out a grand Arab tent under which many people can come and rest. And to a certain extent, the dream of the Islamists of creating quote-unquote pure societies,
right,
of only Muslims and of only Muslims of a certain type, has been the thing that is prompting this change. I mean, we don't, from over here, we think it's all about us. You know, we think it's all about America. We think, or if you're in Israel, you think it's all about Israel.
Right.
It's not. There's a lot of internal dynamics going on. And so this question of where have all the Jews gone is a live question. They read the Quran. They know that Muhammad had Jewish neighbors.
Right.
You know, they hear the stories from their grandparents. They knew that they used to have Jewish neighbors.
Right.
And what you've seen growing up alongside all these social changes is even in current Gulf literature, cinema, TV, what you're seeing is the emergence of Jewish characters, which are in some way a figment of the imagination, but more importantly, they're a manifestation of memory.
Yep.
These are to a certain extent, are characters that they remember.
Yeah, what's old?
Not us individually, but they remember us. And they bemoan the fact that we haven't been there, and that makes them feel like it's an unnatural state.
Yeah, what's...
And I'm going to say something that might sound a little controversial, but there are, it's kind of like the unspoken secret, that there are a good number of people in the Gulf living as Muslims who know that they have Jewish ancestry.
Wow, interesting.
They know that they have Jewish ancestry, and I've been getting some of these stories.
Oh, is that interesting?
And by the way, it's not just people in the Gulf. It's people from around the Arab world who, you know, for work or for other reasons,
right,
are making their home in the UAE. I mean, that's mostly
right,
my context, who will say, you know, can you help me get on Birthright? Can you help me get on Masaq? Can you help me with my, you know, amazing, amazing stories. There's even someone from Saudi Arabia who I met. This is an incredible story. Whose family, his name is Mohammed, but which is obviously a very common name. His family was originally a Yemenite family that 80 years ago, 100 years ago, was on its way, like many Yemenite families, from Yemen to Israel. One branch of the family stopped along the way in Saudi Arabia, and the other branch continued to Israel. And you have this irony of one branch of a family literally almost becomes a member of Knesset, and then another branch are covert Jews living as Muslims in Saudi Arabia.
Unbelievable. Rabbi Sarna, I maybe after we're both vaccinated or when we reopen the studio to guests, I got to have you in here, which shouldn't be too difficult since we're both in lower Manhattan so often, and we got to continue this conversation. I have so many more questions, but I also look forward to actually being in the Gulf with you because you may have been the only thing missing, frankly, from our journey there back in December. Congratulations on the Association of Gulf Jewish Communities, and thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Rabbi Yehuda Sarna, Honorary Chair of the Association of Gulf Jewish Communities, which was just announced yesterday. And you hear just how significant it is. Pretty amazing. And you are listening to America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NahumSingle.com and the Nahum Single Network, and of course on the beloved NSN app.